my infrastructure is just my perimeter fence and my water system, and I've got one fence down the center to hook my polybraid onto, and that's it. And I use a four-wheeler to run my temporary fencing around, and I move my portable water tank around, and it's really pretty simple stuff. The management works. It's all about the management.
Welcome to the 344th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. Okay, time for the word of the day, flerd, which is spelled F-L-E-R-D. It's a combination of flock and herd. This describes a situation where a farming operation combines two different species, such as cattle and sheep, and grazes them on a piece of ground simultaneously. It can be a way of producing livestock that saves time and makes use of a limited number of acres. And since cattle and sheep graze differently, a flerd can be an efficient way to get the most bang for your buck out of acres that are less than optimal production-wise. Flerd grazing is just one of the ways George Heller is building a livestock operation on worn-out, sandy soil near the town of Verndale, which, depending on whom you ask, is in either the central part of Minnesota or is verging on being in the northern part of the state. Whatever the geographical reference, needless to say, George is farming some challenging ground. Besides grazing coarse, drought-prone soil, he's also dealing with a growing season that's only 120 days long. In contrast, the growing season in southeastern Minnesota can be as long as roughly 150 days or more. As George puts it, he's always planning for winter in his neck of the woods. But since buying a few bottle lambs 5 years ago, George has gradually built up an operation that's based on a ewe flock as well as a cow-calf herd of South Pole beef cattle. The ultimate goal of his operation, which is called West 80 South Poles, is to create a seed stock enterprise. He's particularly interested in how he can develop a line of South Pole cattle that are adapted to a northern climate. South Poles are usually associated with the hot, humid climate of the southern U.S. and are a small-framed animal that can do well on grass and are resistant to parasites. The farmer now utilizes adaptive rotational grazing on 290 owned and rented acres to support his cattle and sheep, as well as to regenerate the depleted soil. The 43-year-old is building his enterprise literally from the ground up. Beyond fencing and watering systems, as well as a four-wheeler, his infrastructure is minimal. And he estimates that not counting the land and animal costs, he has just a few thousand dollars invested in the whole operation. By the way, speaking of land costs, because it's considered marginal soil, George has been able to access acres at a much lower price than his counterparts in prime corn and soybean country. The farmer runs a concrete pouring business with 5 full-time employees, so time is a valuable commodity. Despite being limited in how many hours he can spend on the farm, George moves his animals daily, something that was particularly important in 2023, when it only rained 4 inches between May and September in his area. He feels techniques like this not only make good use of available forage and protect pastures from overgrazing, but have built up the soil carbon on acres that, before he started farming them, were pretty much tapped out by years of haying. George traveled to southeastern Minnesota in June 2024 to present at the Land Stewardship Project's Driftless Grazing School, which was hosted by livestock producers Jordan and Rochelle Meyer. The farmer from the North Country made it clear that he was in awe of the comparatively rich soil and decent climate the Meyers and the other school participants were dealing with. Nevertheless, he had an important message for the grazers. No matter what their circumstances, success isn't about having the best soil and weather. Through careful observation and the ability to adapt and keep things in context, even the most challenging growing conditions can generate a successful livestock operation. As the grazing school wrapped up its second and final day, I chatted with George about his bootstrap livestock operation and how he's been able to gradually build a solid foundation under less than optimal conditions when it comes to soil, infrastructure, and time.
So we just started out 5 years ago. We wanted to get some clean meat to eat, and I got some younger kids and wanted to get something for them to do. So we went and got 6 bottle lambs and started with them. And I kind of started watching YouTube and found a couple people on there and caught the bug a little. So then I wanted to push it a little further. And bought some hare ewes, and then I went and bought some rams in Missouri, and then I bought some cows, and I've just been kind of progressing from there. And we ended up buying an 80-acre farm so we could graze on it because the land we had didn't have a lot of grass on it, mostly trees. And it's just been going pretty good, and we ended up buying another 160-acre farm last fall. So right now, land available to graze, we're at like 290 acres of grazable land. We've got 135 fenced right now, and we're working on fencing the other 160.
And what was the history of this land? Had it been cropped or
hayfields? Old hayfields. Okay. Yep. They're really depleted, and we're in coarse sand, so I mean, if it's dry for a week or two, it's pretty dry.
That's a good point about the hay. You know, people think of hay, well, it's a perennial. So it's building the soil. But if you're taking hay off every year and you're not putting anything back, it can deplete the soil pretty good.
Right, because carbon's the key to keeping the soil healthy. And if you're removing all the carbon and not putting anything back, you're robbing your soil of nutrients, and you're robbing your soil biology of its ability to improve things.
Yeah, so we're at this grazing school here. We're here in southeast Minnesota. It's a lot different soil type, a lot different landscape. You're from Brainerd, which you call central Minnesota. Some people consider that northern, but it is north of here.
It is central.
But it is a different, it's like you said, it's real sandy soil.
Yep.
And I assume you have a shorter growing season. There's probably some other challenges.
About 120-day growing season. So, I mean, we got to do things quick, and we got to plan. Always planning for winter. So, basically, as soon as the grass starts growing, we're planning for the following winter, managing our grasses so we can grow some stockpile to graze late into the season, and trample carbon down and try to build fertility in the soil. And it's been a little bit of a challenge because our ground is so poor, but we've been making improvements, been out wintering there, feeding hay out in the wintertime, and that's been making a lot of improvements.
Yeah. You're doing sheep and cattle, right?
Doing sheep and cattle right now. I'm just on the beginning end of trying to build a cow-calf operation. I want to do a South Pole seed stock operation. I don't know if you know what South Pole cattle are. They're called the Southern Mama Cow. So they're really bred for down in the south in the really hot, humid climates.
Oh.
But they're super efficient on grass, and they're good parasite resistance, and they've got a small frame size, and they do really well on our northern forages. So what I'm trying to do is get a northern adapted South Pole breed that I can sell seed stock off of. And then same with the sheep too. I want to get the sheep, same thing, sell seed stock off them. Mm-hmm. I mostly want to try to do that instead of trying to do grass-fed beef.
So you're really you're starting up from the ground up, and everything from the soil. You're not even able to come into a farm and say, okay, we've got a certain...
No. In fact, Rochelle was remarking on a poor pasture that she had down the bottom, and it's probably better than any piece of ground I've got. Yeah. So it's been a challenge, but I mean, I guess I'm up for it, and that's where I'm at. So.
And was the land a little more affordable since
it's much more affordable there. I mean, you're talking $3,000 an acre where I'm at, and I mean, I think down here you're talking, if you can pick up an acre for $10,000 to $15,000, you're doing pretty good. So it's quite a bit more affordable there. They call what it's called marginal land. Mm-hmm. Mostly all deer hunting is the primary function of most of the land around where we live.
You make a good point there, because it's marginal land. You were able to, maybe as a beginning farm, I don't know, how old are you?
43.
I still consider that a beginning farm. Anybody younger than me,
a beginning farmer. Beginning farmer.
You're beginning because you don't.
Years.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, you're able to get access to that land, to land you wouldn't be able to get access to down here, much more affordable. Downside to that is, well, it's really poor land. There's a reason it's accessible, that you're able to get access to it. But because you are learning some of these soil health practices, you're able to utilize livestock and multi-species grazing, you're able to add value to that land, it sounds
Absolutely,
like.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we've been making quite a bit of improvements with the winter feeding and the running the cattle, and we do a daily rotation on the cattle to maximize our rest periods and maximize our fertility program. So we're really working towards getting the land improved so we can get a bigger stand of grass and then increase our stock density. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a goal. It's a goal to be able to run. I'd like to run 50 pairs and 100 head of ewes on one piece of land, so that's kind of my goal.
What are you doing now?
We got about 120 sheep. So 60 ewes and all their lambs, so it's about 100, 120, 140 sheep, and then we've got about 30 head of cattle right now. It's probably, I don't know, 15 to 18 pairs right now.
Can you take us through, I know it's not typical, but what would be, if you come to a piece of ground that you're trying to improve, and what would be the kind of the cycle that you would go through with kind of building that soil health up?
Cattle, well, you want to make sure you got a good perimeter fence. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Second thing is your water system. Get your water system developed. You get your perimeter fence and your water system developed, that gives you the ability to target areas with temporary fencing. So then you can target an area, move on, and let it rest, and then you can keep doing that in different spots. Mm-hmm. And you can adjust your paddock sizes, adjust, you know, everything. It's really versatile if you just get a good perimeter and good water system going, and then use temporary fencing in the inside.
Yeah. Are you moving stock every day?
We'll do a daily move on our cattle and sheep. We do a daily move, and then I got some bulls that I move about every other day. So, and I got a set of rams that we're moving every couple days too.
One of the things you talked about was you are really kind of bootstrapping it in that you really want to keep your inputs low. You don't want to have equipment, and all that. So, So basically it sounds your infrastructure consists of what?
My infrastructure is just my perimeter fence and my water system, and I've got one fence down the center to hook my polybraid onto, and mm-hmm. and that's it. And I use a four-wheeler to run my temporary fencing around, and I move my portable water tank around, and it's really pretty simple stuff. I got very little invested in the actual infrastructure of it. You know, the land was expensive, but the actual infrastructure, I mean, I've only got a few thousand dollars into all that. And I don't have a tractor that I'm out running implements with, and I don't seed anything. So all I do is I unroll hay, and I got an ATV bale unroller I can pull with a four-wheeler. I use a little Suzuki Sidekick in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. It's just like a side-by-side, but way cheaper. So the idea is to be low input. I just keep the money in your pocket and don't send it to town. That's a big deal. There's a guy out of South Africa, Ian Mitchell Innes, and that's a big deal for him, is keep your money in your pocket, don't send it to town. In South Africa, they don't have inputs, so they have to manage their way through things. Mm-hmm. And I honestly feel like that's the way it should be here too. But yeah. I haven't done any programs or anything like that. It's all been out of pocket and just building it on my own and using knowledge from other people that I've met along the way and trying to learn from them and learn from myself as well.
So are you doing any seeding, or is it all the seed bank?
No seeding. I'm gonna try to use all animal impact and putting down carbon with hay, and then try to stimulate the latent seed bank and try to get the grasses to express themselves.
This year, they can't turn the faucet off. The rains, it flipped completely. Last year, I assume you were in the same situation we are down in this area, and it must have been challenging. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so between the months of May and September, we got 4 inches of rain, and it was tough, and in the sand, it's tough, and our grass stand is not good. We've got a lot of bare spots, so it got hot, and what we ended up doing is adjusted our management. We ended up just spreading them out and ended up just trying to get the tips off of each paddock and then keep moving them fast. We're allowing the animals to harvest the energy that's there instead of bringing in supplements or something like that. And we were able to do that. We didn't feed any hay until the end of September last year. And my neighbors were feeding hay in June. So the management works. It's all about the management.
We talked a little bit about that today, that if you can build that soil health, yeah, you're going to have those lean years. It's a little bit like maybe when your paycheck's down 1 year. But if you can put in any kind of investment in that in those good years, then in the lean years, it can really pay off.
Dividends big time. Yep. You can get that carbon down there and the fertility down. And then when we do get moisture, boy, it goes, because the pastures now are really cranking good right now.
Yeah. And that's what it's just in general. You know, what kind of observation must be so key for something like this when you are really relying on that soil. And you're not relying on inputs to kind of build its own self-generating capacity. Observation must be key. What are some of the things you really look for?
Always looking at the height of the grass stand, always looking at the animal performance. Animal performance is probably our number one factor that we're trying to go for on our farm. Because we're running a seed stock operation, everything needs to look tip-top. Mm-hmm. So we're constantly looking to try to improve that animal performance. And to do that, we need to have them in good forage all the time and keep them moving forward. And to do that is you got to watch your stand and make sure you're not overgrazing it. Make sure you got enough for them each day. You don't want to be limiting them so they're losing weight. You want to have them in the optimal situation. And if you're running single hot wires, you want to keep them fed. Otherwise, they're going to try to jump out, and then it'll be a wreck.
So we talked a little bit about context today, because I know a lot of people are familiar with the – it was originally, I think, the five rules of soil, building soil health.
Yeah.
And then in recent years, people have added the term context. Why is that important? That's not a – like a, the other things are like keep it covered – integrate livestock. It's things that you can kind of picture, but the context thing is a little bit more of a mind type picture that I at least the way I look at it.
Yeah. Well, just like we all have different fingerprints, every farm is different and every piece of ground is different. What's going to work on one farm isn't necessarily going to work on the other farm because your context might be quite a bit different. Could be steep and heavy soil, or it could be flat and sand. I mean, it's all different. That's why you got to be adaptive so you can adjust to your context and your environment.
Yeah.
So context is a really big deal, and observing your context, that's a huge deal. And then being adaptive to adjust to your context and make the management work.
Yeah, and it must be, the context must, well, as we've seen, change from season to season.
Oh, yeah, it's totally different. Like, this year's completely, like, last year I was thinking about destocking, and now this year I've got all the offspring of the animals I had last year, and I'm thinking, wow, I can carry this many animals on this piece of land, because it's producing big time with the rain.
With the multi-species grazing, I think one of the things you talked about was sheep can make good cow pasture and vice versa is part of it. And part of it, too, is you just don't have the resources to manage two different species on two different parts of the farm, that it's a way to kind of save you labor a little bit.
It's a big labor saver, yeah. I have a full-time business on... Well, I guess I say on the side, but it's my full-time gig.
Yeah.
You know, I'm out every day. I've got five full-time employees that I got to keep busy. So my evenings are moving the cattle. So I've got about two to 4 hours a day maybe if I'm lucky to work with these cattle. So
yeah.
I've got to kind of have it streamlined so I can get out there and get things done in an efficient manner.
So how does that work? Do you methodically look at, well, I'm going to put the sheep in first, or is it just all depend?
No, they're all together. Yeah, they all run in one flirt is what we call it, and the dogs are in there too. So it's just one group of animals, and I just move them every day all together, and they're all intermingled, and it works really well. I mean, it's an idea that was brought up when I first started looking into this stuff, and I heard about it, and I was like, well, I'm going to try that. So I did it, and I've pretty much always had a flirt, so I don't really know much different.
Yeah, so they graze differently, right?
They do. They go after different species. You know, the sheep are a little better browsers, so they'll go after more of the woody stuff and more of the broadleaf weeds and things like that. And the cattle are more like they like the grass, so they'll manage the grass a little better, and they do more trampling. And so, I mean, they can improve the pasture for each other, really. Very complementary.
I know context is important, and every farm is different, but do you have any general advice to somebody who's maybe in your situation who really just wants to bootstrap, doesn't have great expensive land, doesn't have a lot of equipment, whatever, but just really wants to bootstrap it like you've been doing?
Just concentrate on your management and observe what's going on. Observe your pastures, observe your animals, and just focus on adjusting your management. If something's not working, change it up. If something is working, keep doing that. And if you're seeing good results in your animal performance, keep going. If it's not working, step back, look at it, and adjust your management. It's all about being adaptive to what is going on.
Yeah, that's why they call it adaptive grazing.
That's right.
For more on building soil health profitably, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 344 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, a Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.